Florida State, Miami. Michael, this is the one we've been waiting for. This is my favorite week of the year, my favorite game of the year. I don't care about any of the other circumstances. When this one comes around, it's just different, man. This game hits different. Doak's going to be sold out on Saturday night. It's going to be a crazy environment. It always is when this rivalry comes to town, man. I cannot wait to get into this one. We're going to talk about that today. We're going to break down Florida State versus Miami, this big matchup. It's a top 20 matchup now. We kind of let the top 10 rankings slip away, but that's okay. It's still going to be a massive game. So, Michael, right, man, I cannot wait to get into this rivalry game. And this is the biggest one we've had in a while. So there's a lot to talk about here. But before we do that, man, how are you? And thanks for joining me for another one, man. This is the big one, Florida State, Miami.
Oh, man, big game, big time. You got two ranked teams coming into Doak Campbell Stadium, 7:30. You got ACC game day there. I mean, it's going to be an electric environment. Anytime Miami comes to town, it's electric. But especially when they've been ranked, you know, the history of this game, of this rivalry, especially when it's ranked versus ranked, it's going to be incredible. Man, can't wait to get into this preview.
Heck yeah, man. I mean, when you go back to talking about this game, just the history, the rivalry. To me, this is one of the hardest hitting rivalries.
Yes.
This is one of the rivalries, like, with the biggest names.
Yes.
That's associated with it. When you just look back at the history of this, there's been so many games where it's just meant so much. Yes. Like, this was used to be a de facto play-in game for the national championship when,
absolutely,
you know, before the playoff era. So, man, it's huge. And this is going to be another big chapter because it really feels like, I know we lost last week at Virginia, but if you beat Miami, you're right back in the playoff picture. Miami's trying to stay in the playoff picture.
That's right.
You know, so again, this is going to be one that there's a lot on the line for this one. This is probably one that's meant the most in a while for both of these programs. And, you know, I don't know how most of our fans stand. You know, obviously there's Florida, there's Miami.
Right.
You know me, like, I dislike Florida. And Michael, in my life, man, I try to live right. I try to be a good Christian man. I don't hold any hate for anyone in my heart. But dadgummit, I hate Miami, man. I cannot stand them guys. I don't love the fan base. I know you have some Miami fans that you're friends with. I have a couple too that I don't mind.
Yep.
For the most part, though, that's a tough fan base to deal with. We'll just leave it at that, to be polite. But man, I don't know where you stand on the Florida-Miami thing, but this is, like I said, this is one I have circled on my calendar all year because I absolutely can't stand that team down there in Morro Gables. But again, man, you just talk about this is another chapter in the history of this storied rivalry. And the first time they've been ranked together since 2016.
Last time
we were both ranked in Doak Campbell Stadium was 2013.
Yep.
So that's a big one there, man. Just give me some thoughts on just this Florida State Miami rivalry as a whole. Maybe your experience with it. I can tell you right now, my favorite experience. You guys know if you listen to this channel, I talk about this game 12 years later. That 2013 Florida State Miami game. Wow. I know there's a lot of history, right? But just the best college football environment I've personally ever been to. I've been to some really big games, but just the energy in the stands and before the game, the best I've ever seen. And then, of course, 2023 was electric too.
Yeah.
But, I mean, this is one that it's just different, man, when this game comes around.
Absolutely. Listen, this will potentially be my only second time I've seen Florida State versus Miami in person. It'll be the second time that I potentially will see them at Doak Campbell Stadium as well, too. I mean, for me, this rivalry, gosh, you know, this rivalry has caused a lot of tears in my eyes. This rivalry has broken my heart so many different times. What's the old saying with, our beloved coach, Bobby Bowden, may he rest in peace, of like, he would have won like at least three more national titles if it wasn't for Miami.
Yeah.
Right. Like, I remember being a high school junior at a band competition, getting off the field, running to the bus with a whole bunch of my friends, and the bus driver turning on this game only to listen to the wide right three game, and just falling and crying, like just devastation of anger, you know, all my friends and people who were Miami fans, you know, just railing on you as well. But then like the elation, I remember exactly where I was, sitting in my kitchen table in California, Santa Clarita, California, thinking this game was over when 4th and 14 happened, right? I remember the hit that I think it was the famous one that happened in the rain at Doe Campbell Stadium, where the Florida State player lays out the dude.
Yeah, when Stanford Samuels killed Roscoe Parrish.
Decapitated Roscoe Parrish, that's right. And it was like, holy cow, hard hitting. I mean, this was a game that used to see, you know, used to assume there was at least, you know, 15 to 20 first round picks on the field at one time, you know, like that. Yeah. That was the legacy of this game. And I don't care what anybody says, right? I don't care. I will argue to the day I take my last breath. This is one of the top three rivalries in college football. Oh,
yeah.
Doesn't matter if they're ranked or not. It's one of the top three rivalries in college football just because of the history, the pageantry, the drama of it all. So yeah, I love this game when we win it, and I hate this game when we lose.
Yeah. I know, like I would never wish us to go 1-11, but if we did, I would hope that one win would come against Miami. Yeah. I mean, because like you said, it just means so much, and the fan base is, you know, the trash talk in the Big Three it's different, man. So yeah. There's a lot on the line from that perspective. And like you said, the great games over the year, 4th and 14, one of the recent ones, you know, the big hits. We already talked about Stanford Samuel. Of course, Marvin Jones, the hit. Yes. That one's one that lives on in history. Nigel Bradham. Bird. Like, there's just so many fun moments in this rivalry. But we got a big one on Saturday, Michael. So let's actually turn our focus to that. We just wanted to kind of look back and talk a little bit, share some fun moments with this rivalry, because it is so much fun to talk about. And I do agree. I think this is one of the top three in the country. I mean, this is one of the ones where you see they get chippy before the whistle, they get chippy after the whistle, they get chippy at halftime. You know what I mean? So it's going to be a fun game on Saturday night. So let's talk about this one here. Just a couple of quick updates from the Florida State side of things. Roydell Williams is set to make his return for you in this game. He was on the depth chart. He's listed as questionable, so we'll see if he actually plays. Obviously, Kevin Wynn was on the depth chart for the Virginia game, did not make an appearance, so I don't really follow those a whole lot. Mike Norvell did say that Ashlyn Barker will be questionable. He got injured against UVA, so hopefully he's back. But you know who is going to be back, Michael? That is Jimbo Fisher with ACC game day, so it's going to be a little bit crazy. But you know what's funny? Obviously, everybody knows that we didn't get game day, which is a sham. That's a whole nother argument for a whole nother day. I'm actually happy about it because one less distraction, right? Let's just lock in and focus on this game. But we still get the downside of game day. We still got Kirk coming to call the game and Fowler that. So, you know, you don't get the experience of game day, but you get the terrible side of them calling the game. But, man, ACC game day, like you said, is going to be here. Jimbo's going to be back at Florida State probably for one of the first times since he left. So, man, there's a lot building up with that. But, you know, that's going to be interesting in its own right to see. And fans are encouraged to go. I think they're going to be there from 10 to 12. They're going to open up Lot 8 at 8 o'clock in the morning to let people go to that. You know, when we get into this game, Michael, number 18 Florida State, 3-1 against number 3 Miami, 4-0. They got jumped by Oregon, so they were number 2. So obviously both of our rankings slipped a little bit. As you mentioned, 7:30 p.m. at night, first night game in Doak Campbell Stadium, sold out. It's been sold out for a little bit. So, I mean, Doak is going to be a scene on Saturday night. Yeah. I'll just say that. I mean, if it's anything like the Bama game, you know, or 2013 Miami, Florida State or whatever, it's going to be one of the best environments you'll see on Saturday. It's going to be absolutely bonkers. Obviously on ABC, nationally televised, so you guys can watch that anywhere and everywhere. The spread is very interesting in this game, Michael. I mean, you know, we just went on the road to Virginia, and I think at that point it was a 6.5 or 5.5 point spread by the time it kicked off. Miami's coming in at 4.5-point favorite. I mean, that's
it started at 6.5 and it dropped.
And it's come down. So that I do find a little bit interesting. You know, we joked in the Virginia game. We said, what does Vegas know that maybe we don't? Well, 4.5 points, number 3 versus number 18, what did they know that we don't? And we got some things of what we think that might be. The over-under is at 53.5. If you break that down, the implied score is 29-25 of what the Vegas experts think. You know, that's probably more of a 28-24 if you want to put it more in a football likely to happen score. But, you know, I will say this is one of these things where we have traded a couple of blowouts.
Yeah.
You know, in recent years, the 45-3 to 52-10 and all that stuff. But typically, I think like 18 of the last 20 meetings or something like that, 18 of the last 25 come down to one score. This is probably going to be a good game no matter what. Now, in this series, of course, we know Miami has the overall series, but Florida State has won 3 of the past 4. Miami did win last year down in Coral Gables, 36-14. But the last ranked meeting, as I mentioned, Michael, 2016, Number 23, Florida State, goes in there to Miami, into Hard Rock. The block at the Rock upsets Miami 20-19 on a blocked BAT. The last ranked meeting in Doak, 2013, number 3, Florida State, beats Miami, number 7, 30-26. And here's a fun fact for you, Michael. You know, we talked about the ranked on ranked meetings. Well, at least that way you know both teams are good, right? Because there have been some times we've met where one team is clearly better than the other.
Right.
In the last 5 meetings that these two teams played when they were ranked, Florida State's 5-0. And so there's a little juju for the good guys. Now, you do have an overall losing record in ranked matchups by a small margin. But one of the other big things, I'll kick it back to you to give me some thoughts on that. I really think one of the biggest things in this game. Now, we do know Miami is coming off a bye week.
Right.
We do know Florida State got one extra day with the Friday game at Virginia.
Right.
But, you know, we went on the road to Charlottesville last week and kind of got shocked on our first road test. Yeah. And, you know, maybe there was some factors that played into that. Well, Michael, there's a certain team that's coming to Doak Campbell Stadium on Saturday that it's going to be their first road test. This will be the first time they played a road game. Florida State went up to Charlottesville feeling a little good about itself. Florida State just lost. I think Miami's probably feeling a little good about itself, feeling a little confident right now, going on the road for the first time. They're kind of in the same situation that Florida State was in on Friday night. So could we see that same type of thing? We're going to talk about the game, but man, give me some thoughts on what we just talked about.
Yeah, listen, I think with this rivalry, you're just never really entirely sure what you're going to get. Even when one team is clearly more, you know, maybe talented wise, maybe having a better season than the other team, that game is still always closer than what the experts think, right? Like, again, you've had very few times where it's been blowouts. I mean, obviously last year was a 36-14 loss. I mean, 2 years ago at 2022, you know, Florida State went down to Hard Rock and won 45-3 on a butt whooping, right? Then in 2020, obviously Florida State, Mike Norvell has COVID. He can't go to the game. They get blown out 52-10. Outside of that, when you go back through the history of this game, you don't see that many blowouts. I mean, the last blowout, Florida State 41-14, that was in 2013, right? You have to go all the way back to Florida State going down to Sun Life when it was called Sun Life in 2010, when it was a 45-17 blowout. Florida State won that game, right? Miami, on the other side, there hasn't been many games where Miami has just, I mean, you have to go all the way back to 1990. No, not even then. Gosh, I didn't realize that. You have to, there has not been very many games. I mean, maybe the 49-27 loss in 2001, where, you know, Miami had, gosh, that team, that Miami team was incredible. They won a national title that year. They had, like, I forget how many first-round draft picks they had on that team. But Miami, outside of really the 36-14 win last year, they haven't really blown out Florida State. So to expect
other than 2020,
other than 2020. But that's
I don't even count that game, really.
Yeah, that's such a weird game. But outside of those two, Florida State, Miami has never really blown out Florida State. Florida State's blown out Miami several times. And so you're going to this game thinking, okay, this is going to be within somewhere near the spread, maybe a 10-point, you know, give or take there in that sense as well, too. And like you said, Miami's coming in. It's their first road game of the season. They're coming off a bye week. So is there rust? Is there not? You know, they've been putting in a whole bunch of stuff for Florida State that, you know, Florida State should be prepared for. But it'll be an interesting contest to see.
Yeah, I think so. So let's talk about the road to get here for Miami. Now, obviously, they played Notre Dame, they played Bethune-Cookman, they played USF, and then they played UF. And when I looked at this, I didn't really even count those middle two games because they don't match up against those. They should have crushed those teams. And I know South Florida beat Florida, but Florida's offense is absolute dog water. So, like, they should not have beat Florida. Florida probably should have beat Miami if they had a decent offense, but we'll talk about that. So we're going to just kind of focus on the Notre Dame game and the Florida game because that's the most closest to what they're going to see on Saturday night. And I just want to say this before we get into this. You know, I filter for Power Four. I understand Notre Dame is not technically considered a Power Four. I'm going to call them a Power Four team in this preview. Don't think I'm dumb, and I don't know that they're independent. But when I say four Power Four, that also includes Notre Dame. So we're just programming note. So game one. Miami gets the win 27-24 at home over Notre Dame. You know, they kind of jumped out a little bit.
Yeah.
And then Notre Dame clawed back in that game. Miami puts up 27 points, 339 yards, average 4.99 yards per play. And so then I'm looking kind of at how things have gone. And personally, I'll say I think Notre Dame has gotten better the more they played. They look like the Notre Dame you expected now. They looked a little bit rough kind of early in the season there, taking two straight losses. That is the least amount of yards given up by Notre Dame this season. That is the lowest yards per play versus Notre Dame this season. Notre Dame's defense gave up 41 points at home to A&M. They gave up 30 points at home to Purdue, and yet they held Miami to 27 on the road. So, yeah. You know, when we talk about this Miami offense, I'm not blown. Like, I think Virginia's offense is better, if we're being totally honest. Understanding the defenses that maybe they've went against a little bit here, but I think Virginia's offense might be better than what you're going to see against Miami. Now, obviously, Miami's defense is a little bit better than Virginia's. Right. But, you know, again, Purdue scored more points than Miami did on this defense on the road. And then Notre Dame's quarterback in that game, C.J. Carr, was making his very first start. Right. I think Notre Dame forgot Jeremiah Love was on the team because they really didn't seem to use him a lot. But then you look at this one, Carson Beck, 20 of 30, 205, 6.8 yards per attempt, two touchdowns, no interceptions. So not like – not an amazing game, but, you know, he was efficient and got the job done. Miami actually had 4-3 and outs and 11 drives in that game. Notre Dame only had 3-12. So, you know, the offense really wasn't humming in that game. Now, Miami did create 10 pressures. They only got one sack. And, you know, here's the thing, man. I just want to say this because a lot of the Miami fans, they don't show up to games, but they do show up on Twitter. I will give them that. But, you know, when we lost to Virginia, they're like, oh, you gave up these drives. Man, against Notre Dame, they gave up an 11-play 68-yard drive, an 11-play 64-yard drive, a 10-play 54-yard drive. So that we talk a lot about how good that Miami defense is, but it's not like you can't drive down the field and score on them either. So that's just kind of where I'm at looking at this Notre Dame game. I don't think Notre Dame played particularly well in that game. Of course, it was the first game for Miami, too. I'll give them that. But that game was close, man, and Notre Dame has looked a lot better since. And, you know, they love to talk about, well, if you played Bama again, I don't know, man. You play Notre Dame again the way they're playing right now, maybe that game goes a different way. But give me some thoughts on that Notre Dame game.
Yeah, listen, I watched that whole game. We were texting back and forth on that game, and I thought, you know, early on Miami was overwhelming Notre Dame. I felt like Notre Dame was still trying to figure out who they were offensively with that. Obviously, the Miami defensive line, and we'll get into all that stuff, you know, was overwhelming that offensive line. But I thought as the game went on, I thought you saw several things. I thought you saw Notre Dame come to life. I thought C.J. Carr started to find his rhythm. They were calling plays that, like, made sense for him and where he was at. They started leveraging themselves against Miami. So I thought that showed up. I also thought you saw, and you see this often, and I'm not saying this I am saying this as criticism. You saw Mario Cristobal's coaching acumen come to life again and again. Where's just like some questionable coaching decisions. Like this is synonymous with who he is as a coach. He's a great recruiter. Gosh, he can develop an offensive line with the best of them. But oftentimes you're like, just kind of fump. Like, what are you doing here?
Yeah.
So you saw that come. And I just thought that towards the end there, I mean, Notre Dame tied the game up with 3:21 to go. Miami happened to be able to drive down and get the game-winning field goal. I think if you played them again today, I think that game might be a little bit different.
It was almost like Notre Dame just ran out of time. Like, if you'd had one more quarter, maybe that game goes the other way. But credit to Miami. They closed the game out, and they won. In the first game of the season. So, you know, I mean, credit to them. But again, that game was pretty darn close. And then you look at the next game here against Florida. And, you know, it's funny because, like you said, man, I actually had to go back and watch the Notre Dame game because I was like, I can't even judge the defense against Florida because that offense is so bad. So you had to go kind of watch that. But then you had to watch the defense because you want to see what Florida's defense did. So Miami does win this game 26-7. But what I find when I watch this game, Michael, it was 13-7 with 4 minutes left in the game. That game was close. That was a one-score game, which is why I say that if Florida's offense wasn't just complete dumpster juice,
that's right,
they could have probably won that game. I mean, Miami did end up scoring two touchdowns in the final 4 minutes. I will admit they had one taken off the board that should have counted with the whistle thing there. But also one of those touchdowns was because Florida had to go for it because they were losing at the end of the game. And so Miami gets it on a short field, which aided one of those touchdowns. But again, that was a one score game against a terrible offense in the fourth quarter. When you look at Miami's offense, they had worse yards per play against Florida than South Florida did, than LSU did. USF averaged 6 yards a play. LSU averaged 6 yards a play. Miami averaged 4.5 yards per play. So that offense did worse against Florida's defense than even South Florida did, which is kind of surprising. And that was a tight game, so it's not like it was because of blowout time or anything like that. We also saw that defense turn Carson Beck back to kind of what we saw at Georgia at times, some flashes of why some people weren't sad that he left Athens. 17 of 30, 160 yards, 5.3 yards per attempt, no touchdowns, one interception, had a QBR of 51.4, PFF grade of 57.1. That was also the most pressures he's faced that entire the entire season. Now, it was only six of them, but – you know, they kind of got him off his spot. And, you know, they I think they had three picks against him in Jacksonville last year, too. So, I mean, that's the thing. I'm going to talk more about Carson Beck and things like that coming up, man. But, you know, Miami's defense in that one did get 16 pressures and 5 sacks. Now, I do wonder after that game, Lagway was in a boot like the very next week or whatever. I wonder if he was not fully healthy in that game. And that had a little bit to do with the 5 sacks. Now, if you're wondering, maybe Miami's defensive line is just that great. Well, LSU had 20 pressures against Florida. So LSU's defense kind of did a little bit more than Miami's did. They only had 3 sacks. And when we talk about the drives, Florida did put together, as bad as that offense was, in the third quarter, they put together an 11-play, 80-yard drive late in the third quarter, and 70 of those yards came on the ground. So, again, man, you can – it's not like it's impossible to move the ball on this Miami defense for everything that they make it out to be. You know, but Miami's defense has speed, but there were plays there, man. Lagway is just a terrible quarterback. I mean, he missed so many throws in this game. And I mean, easy throws. He missed gimme throws. I don't want to say me at quarterback because it probably wouldn't have been any better. If they had DJ Uiagalelei at quarterback, they might would have won that game. There's no bricks in Miami Stadium, so they would have been safe. But you know, Florida's offense only had 32 yards and one first down in the first half. Jeez. And even at halftime, they were still only down 13-0. Yeah. And the thing is, I think Florida's defense was on the field for 20 minutes in the first half. So that defense just got worn down, but they still kept them in the game. And so, I mean, that's that Florida game. I think when I watched that, I think I came away from that game like I understand Miami's still good. I get that because I think Florida's defense is pretty darn good. I will give them that. They're just – it's like us last year. They just got a terrible offense on the other side.
Yeah.
But I walked out of that game going, I don't think I'm as worried about this. I'm – obviously, it's going to be a tough test, right? But I was – I did not walk out of that game as impressed as I was going into that game, just seeing what Florida was able to do to that offense.
Yeah, I think so. I think when you look at Miami's defense, first of all, against Florida's offense, they weren't really facing a competent offense, like you said, right? Like DJ struggled to make reads. He struggled to really – the play calling was suspect as well. I mean, that Florida offense is pedestrian to the nth of that word. So it's really hard to judge that defensive performance against that, right? I think there's a reason why USF won that game in such a low scoring manner, because they didn't have to score a lot of points. They knew as long as they didn't make big mistakes against that defense, that their defense could keep Florida's offense in check. And so I think that's kind of a hard thing to look at and say, well, man, do we really know Florida's Miami's defense? Because basically you have to look at the Notre Dame game, and Notre Dame put some yards, put some points against that game, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you can look at the USF game, you know, they went up and down, but there's a whole talent disparity in that game that we talked about on the show as well. Yep. Obviously, Bethune, that like, you can't even look at those games. Just like you can't look at Florida State versus Kent State, Florida State versus East Texas A&M. It's just not the same. You have to look at Alabama, and you have to look at Virginia. And so when you look at those two things with Miami, it gives you hope. And not just hope, but like confidence, like, okay, we saw them against a competent defense and they struggled in a lot of ways, right? I mean, yes, they got up 21-7 on Notre Dame, but, you know, Notre Dame made some adjustments and then stormed right back to the game. Against Florida, it was not a competent offense. Against USF or Bethune-Cookman, it was a disparity in talent. So what happens when they face somebody as good, if not better, talent-wise, scheme, all like that stuff on the field. What happens then? And I think that's the question it leaves you with.
Yeah, I mean, I think Florida's offense is averaging 8.5 points per game against Power Four teams right now, if you take out the Long Island University thing.
Yeah.
And so I think a lot of it comes back to when you talk about the offense versus the Miami defense, is it's just like we talked about against Virginia last week, right? Is Virginia's offense in week five, now that they've had time to get humming, better than what Alabama's offense in week one was? Well, I would say, without a shadow of a doubt, I think Florida State's offense right now is much better than Notre Dame's in week one. And obviously, clearly, anybody's is better. Leon County High School's is better than Florida's. So I think that this is by far going to be the biggest test for that defense, just from an offensive perspective, because they really haven't faced a good offense so far this season.
Right.
And I do think one of the things with Florida State is I would like to see them kind of try and start fast against this team, because when you look at those two Power Four games, they only scored 13 points in the first half against Florida, and they scored 14 points in the first half against Notre Dame. So it's not like they're jumping out to some really fast start. Right. So Florida State, you should be able to avoid getting in a hole early. You may even be able to take a lead into halftime. And so a couple of things that I looked at here, just to kind of get a gravity to weight, right? So this is only counting Notre Dame and Florida and Virginia and Alabama, right? And I didn't adjust for end of half or anything like that. Okay. But when you look at the offense versus Power Four, Miami's offense has scored 6 touchdowns in 23 drives, and they have faced the 24th and the 99th ranked scoring defenses. Florida State has scored 9 touchdowns in 20 drives, so 3 more touchdowns and 3 less drives, and they've faced the 28th ranked defense and the 67th ranked defense. Sounds like one offense is doing a little bit better than the other. Mm. Now, on the flip side of that, Miami's defense is got better numbers here. So they have faced the 11th and 99th ranked defense. Because I tell you what, something about Notre Dame right now, they want that defensive coordinator the heck out of South Bend, because they do not like that guy, because their defense is not good. At least it has not been good so far. But so they faced 11 and 99, and they have given up 4 touchdowns in 23 drives. Florida State has given up 7 touchdowns in 21 drives, and they faced the 8th and the 26th ranked defense. So they got a little edge on defense, and I'm giving a little edge to Florida State on offense here. But when we talk about Miami's offense, you know, this team, first off, I want to say the one thing I did notice on rewatch of Florida, this team is 70th in the country in penalties per game right now.
Yeah.
They had 6 penalties in the first half against Florida. The center had like 3 pre-snap penalties in the first half. They are +3 in turnover margin, so they've been on the positive side of that. But man, when we talk about this offense, right, let's get into this Miami offense. They got a big offensive line. That really is the foundation of what this offense does. This is the one thing, if there's questions anywhere else, it's not really on the offensive line. They're massive. I think their average weight is like 329. You got a bunch of guys that I think one of their tackles is like 6'8". I mean, they're huge. They have an experienced quarterback in Carson Beck, who we know is a 6-year guy coming out of Georgia. They got speed at the skill positions. But, you know, Michael, it's really not the flashiest offense. It's kind of the opposite of what you've seen in a couple of games so far this season. They like to use a lot of condensed formations, so they will draw you in instead of spreading you out, which I kind of like against Florida State, because when you spread us out and we can't defend the edge, that makes me nervous, right? So I think this might help keep your run support tighter into the box, which I do like. But they'll do a lot of that, and they will run right at you. You know, that's a Mario Cristobal thing, with that offensive line coach mentality. They're going to run right at you, and they like the quick game from a passing standpoint. They don't really air it out a whole lot, and we'll talk about that a little bit more in a second when we get into Carson Beck. But 55% run, 45% pass, 62% of their passes are under 10 yards. So a lot of that is an extension of the run game. I think it's like 24% behind the line of scrimmage. So really, man, they're built to go behind that big offensive line and to try and run the ball and get it to their playmakers in space. They don't really try and stretch the field a ton. It's not a flashy offense. They just know they got a good offensive line and they're leaning on it. So, man, give me some thoughts on what you've seen on film, and then we'll get into some numbers.
Yeah, I would echo everything you just said. I mean, the offense isn't something that you're like, oh my gosh, they're spreading you wide out. They're taking tons of shots down the field, and they're dinking and dunking. They're dinking and dunking really in that 10 to 15, like you talked about there, but they're really, Cristobal's number one thing is he wants to lean on you. He believes that he has a better offensive line than your defensive line, and he wants to run the ball. He wants to run the ball on you, over you, through you, all of it. And so you're going to see a lot of that. Now, they're going to mix because Carson Beck is a really good quarterback. He's accurate in a lot of ways. So they're going to mix some of that. They're going to do some level stuff with you. They're going to run a tight end in and then run a wide receiver back. And like you talked about, those condensed formations, what they're trying to do is get you confused. You're going to see a lot of mesh right now. Interesting, Jesse, is we just saw a lot of mesh, you know? And it killed us. We did not make the right and a proper adjustment. And even when we talked about the mesh in the Virginia preview, you know, I talked about, you know, you have to communicate or you have to run zone, but in zone, you still have to communicate, guys. You still got to talk, right? And Miami's going to run a lot of that at you too, as well, too. They're going to run some motion because they're going to try to get the matchups on you, but they're trying to get a hat on a hat. They're trying to pound the ball down your throat. They will go over the top there. I can't think of his name right now. I'm trying to think of that the freshman wide receiver they have who's like electric.
Malachi Tony.
Tony, yes. That kid, you've got to find him. Just like we talked about in the Bama game, just like we talked about against Virginia. Ross at Bama, it was Ryan Williams. Well, in Miami, it's Tony. You have to find Tony because he has become a favorite target of Carson Beck, and that kid is electric. If you let him get loose, he's great hands, and he's kind of small enough that he can get lost in the shuffle there, and boom, he's got you for 80 yards. So you want to keep your eye on them as well.
Yeah, I think what makes me the most nervous about this offense is they do a lot of the same things that Virginia does.
Yep.
And
yep.
I'm sure they probably watched that film and was like, okay, well, they ran it successfully against them, so we'll see. You talk about this offense, they're scoring on average 26.5 points per game against the Power Four defenses. Florida State right now is averaging 34.5. Mm-hmm. So this offense has not necessarily been lighting it up. Like I said earlier, with the scoring defenses, they played the 99th ranked scoring defense in Notre Dame and the 24th ranked against Florida. Your passing offense here, they are over 1,000 yards. Now, that's not all Carson Beck, but they are over 1,000 yards on the season. But 365 of that only 365 of that was against Power Four. So, again, they kind of ate up those other two teams. Rushing offense here, man, it's not been special, if I'm being honest. Like, 3.8 yards per carry against Power Four defenses. That's not stellar. And they ran it 46 times against Florida. It's not like a real ground and pound type of offense. They've not had a ton of success there. So that's why I pick out the Power Four stats, right? Versus the other ones. 3.8 yards per carry there.
Yeah.
Third downs, 50% conversion, top 25 third down offense. So they are efficient there. Red zone offense, 94%. They've scored 17 of 18 trips, 14 touchdowns, 3 field goals. So they make the most of it when they get down there. And again, like we talked about, it's not the most explosive offense. Only 18 explosive plays so far this year, 14 through the pass, 4 through the run. So again, man, they're just going to give what they're going to take what the defense gives you. And so let's talk about Carson Beck now. It starts with the offensive line, but there's a reason they went out and got Carson Beck to replace Cam Ward, because you wanted a guy to come in who was experienced so you didn't skip a beat. And he's got 31 starts. He's a 6-year player. He started 2 years at Georgia. 73.2% completion percentage so far. He's been very efficient. I think it was Bethune-Cookman. He set like the school record for consecutive completions. I mean, you know, he's been good. I will give him that. He's been better than I thought he's been or was going to be coming from Georgia, especially coming off that arm injury. So I'll give him credit where it's due. He's been better than I thought. 972 yards on the season, 8.7 yards per attempt, 7 touchdowns, 3 picks. But here's why you adjust things, right? Carson Beck versus the Power Four defenses, 183 yards per game, 6.1 yards per attempt, 2 touchdowns and 1 pick. So it just has not been nearly as good against good defenses. And when you look at QBR, he's 16th in QBR. Chandler Morris is 10th. So again, I still stand by. I think Chandler Morris is a better quarterback the way he's playing right now. Yeah. But again, man, you look at the difference in these games, like Notre Dame. He had a 66.7% completion percentage, 205 yards, 2 touchdowns, 6.8 yards per attempt. Then you look at the two cupcake games, it was 91.7% completion percentage, 82, 267 11.1 yards per attempt, 340 yards against South Florida, 12.1 yards per attempt. Yeah. But then you go to Florida, it drops back, 53% completion percentage, 160 yards, 5.3 yards per attempt, zero touchdowns and one pick. So, man, again, when he's played those better defenses, it has not been special. Now, on the ground, he's averaging 3.7 yards per carry sack adjusted and only about 2.5 attempts per game. Now, here's the thing. I watched him a lot at Georgia because I have a lot of Georgia fans, friends, family, and all that stuff. So I watched him a lot there. He can run, right? He is a mobile guy. He just hasn't had to be mobile this year because they protect him so well. So he can use his legs, but he is not a Chandler Morris type of guy. So, man, give me some thoughts on Carson Beck. And I got a couple more things to talk about with him, but I want to give you a chance to just kind of give me some thoughts on what you've seen from him so far against maybe the better defenses that we've seen.
Yeah, listen. Overall, Carson Beck is a really good quarterback. And, you know, I was surprised. Well, not surprised. I understood because of the injury, his draft stock probably got hurt. So he wanted to come back, you know, try to improve that, you know, show them that he could be a first round, second, third round, you know, quarterback out there. I was surprised.
That NIL check didn't hurt either.
Yeah, I bet it didn't. I was surprised at how fast he was able to heal during the offseason. You know, they thought that this was going to go into the season, but he was able to come back. You know, listen, I was really impressed. He opened up that Notre Dame game. I mean, he was on fire. He couldn't miss to save his life. You know, obviously he went 20 for 30 for 205 yards, 66.7 completion percentage. But he was electric. He was great. But then you start seeing once Notre Dame started to figure out kind of what they were trying to do, he really started to struggle. And then of course, against Florida, you really saw that struggle come out. Now, granted, some of that, again, we always have to account for the fact that some of that are drop passes by the receivers, stuff like that. Some of that is a missed route read or something that could be that nature, which causes him to hold the ball a little bit longer. Some of that could have been the pressure in his face. He's only been sacked three times, I believe, on the season.
Yeah.
One came against Notre Dame, one came against Florida, one came against USF. So, you know, Power Four, Group of Five, and then, you know, FCS or FB, whatever the Bethune-Cookman is. So, I think he's a really good quarterback. But if you one of the things we saw when he was at Georgia and a little bit what we saw here at Miami, if you can get, you may not bring him down, but if you can get pressure, most quarterbacks do not like pressure. So if you can get him off his launch space, right, off where he wants to launch the ball, where he wants to set his feet, if you can make him do that, make him scramble, make him see double. I mean, you in a lot of ways, you have to look at what you did against Ty Simpson, right, in that same sense. Now, again, Carson Beck has way more starting experience and game experience than Ty Simpson did. But in that same vein, if you can get Carson Beck to doubt what he is seeing, that's going to bode well for your ability to then get him to make some mistakes, make him throw errant passes, make him pull and try to run the ball when he has a wide open receiver, right? That's what you're going to want to do with him.
You gave me the perfect segue because you just led into exactly what I wanted to talk about. And first off, I will say that Tony White said this week in his press conference, like, you have to find a way to get to him. You got to. And I think Florida State should be aggressive in this because, man, you led me perfectly into what I wanted to talk about. Carson Beck panics under pressure. And it is what you saw it in the Florida game, right? And he wasn't even really under pressure. Miami has done a great job of protecting him so far. He has not been pressured on more than 20% of his dropbacks in any single game this season. So, I mean, I think Tommy was pressured 34% against Virginia and Chandler Morris was around 32%. Carson Beck has not been pressured over 20% in a single game. So they do a great job of protecting him. So getting to him is a heck of a lot easier said than done. But here's what happens if you can get to him. He has been considerably worse under pressure. And so I had to go back to Georgia because, again, we haven't seen him be under pressure at Miami other than the Florida game, which got the most pressure, coincidentally, was also his worst game. So when he was at Georgia, he faced double-digit pressures in six games over two seasons, four in 2024, two in 2023. So six total games in his career, he's faced double-digit numbers of pressures. Now, keep in mind, Florida State had 19 pressures against Alabama and 15 pressures against Virginia. Carson Beck, the most he's faced this season is six. In those six games with double-digit pressures, he has six touchdowns, 11 interceptions and 14 sacks. Oof. If you can get pressure on him, matter of fact, this is my number one key to the game right here. I'm gonna give you the sauce early in the episode. If you can get to Carson Beck, you can see how bad he has been under pressure. 6 touchdowns, 11 interceptions, 14 sacks in 6 games. And so, man, some of those were like 2 and 3 interception games. That's where he really had that rough stretch last year at Georgia. And even back to 2023, he only had 2 games with double-digit pressures there because Georgia had a good offensive line. So, man, if you can find a way to get to him, and again, easier said than done, I think you got an opportunity here. And I want to make this quick, but I looked at Florida. They got 10 pressures against South Florida. They got 7 against LSU and 6 against Miami. So it's not like they have been great. That's a good defense. They just haven't been great at creating pressure. Notre Dame got 6 on them, 17 against A&M, 14 versus Purdue, and 9 versus Arkansas. So they've been a little bit better. So they did a good job of stopping Notre Dame. South Florida, again, if you want to count that game, they did have 6 pressures versus Miami. They got 19 versus Boise, but only 3 versus Florida. So you can tell that's what I'm trying to do here is tell you that the teams that they have played have not been excellent at getting pressure. Florida State at least has done pretty good at getting pressure. I know we talked about they have a tough time creating pressure. They just kind of have a tough time getting sacks. They have a tough time finishing. But, man, if you can get pressure on Carson Beck, I think you can make some things happen against him because he does get a little bit panicky, starts to freak out a little bit, doesn't really – he's just looking for an exit plan. So if you can get to him and finish, man, I think you got a real opportunity. But, again, that's easier said than done. And then one more thing, and I'll throw it back to you, is on the deep ball, it is not his strength. Now, he pushed the ball downfield pretty well at Georgia, but when you watch him against, at Miami so far, I don't know if it's still the arm thing or not, but he's kind of struggled to push the ball downfield since he's been at Miami. They have only done that 15.2% of their throws. Mid-range passes are 19.6%, but Michael, 37.5% of his passes are in that 0 to 9 yard range, and he's lethal in that range. I will say that. So that's what scares me because, you know, Virginia – just came out and they 51.4% of their passes
you to death
was 0 to 9, right? And then 24.1% is behind the line of scrimmage. So he's really good at that 0 to about 10 yards, but then when it gets beyond that, he's not been excellent. So I think if you can pressure him and you can play aggressive in this game, daggone it, Tony White, don't sit back and give them the underneath stuff, man. If he's not been successful at airing it out, man, force him to do that. Force him to make the deep throws. And so if you can do those two things, and again, that's easier said than done, man, I think you can have some success against this offense.
Yeah, listen, we can't come into this game using the same plan against Virginia. And I don't think we will either. But
you'll
we
lose cannot, if you do.
You'll lose immediately. You get blown out. You cannot give tell your corners to sit almost 10 yards to basically give the first down. I mean, we saw that a lot against Virginia. They're playing 9-10 yards back, and then at the snap of the ball, they're backpedaling instead of going up and to meet the receiver there. And so they're automatically giving out the first down. You cannot do that because Carson Beck will just hit that all night, right? And then you'll be forced to suck up, and then that's when they'll try to hit you over the top. No, we have to challenge their wide receivers from the get-go, right? Now, yes, they're going to want to run the ball, so we're going to have to be disciplined in our gaps and our gap assignments, right? We're going to have to fire trigger fast. Like, if you want a key to the game, I'm going to give you the juice early, as you like to say, the sauce. You want a key to the game for me, my number one key? You've got to slow this running game down. You have got to make sure that they are getting a cloud and a dust and barely even that when they're running that ball every time. And I don't even know if I've said it right, but that's what you got to do. Like, you got to make sure that your safeties, your linebackers are triggering right when they're supposed to trigger, that they're trusting what they're seeing and they're triggering to the right gaps and their cutback lanes. Because these running backs like to cut back a lot. You're going to see that a lot. They're going to try to find that cutback opportunity. So you've got to trigger and slow down this running game. And you've got to be aggressive with the wide receivers. Make Carson Beck beat you with his arm. Show him that he can beat you. What you can't do is get beat by being run to death. You cannot let them lean on you like that. And I know that's easier said than done. I know we saw against Virginia that wasn't the thing, but But Jesse, you and I talked about this pre-show. It's like when Florida State understood what they were trying to do and they were actually, you know, aggressive in that sense. I mean, they didn't get positive runs. They got negative runs. They got they could not run on Florida State. Well, I think the same thing has to be true of this. You've got to make Carson Beck beat you with his arms, and you cannot just give up easy first downs over and over again.
Yeah, anytime you pressed those receivers for Virginia or you got pressure on Chandler Morris, they couldn't really do anything. And so you can't sit back and do that same game plan against Miami or they're going to eat you up down the field. Now, when you look at the game against Notre Dame and Florida, it's kind of odd that it's the same exact amount. But when you look at stopped runs, runs that went for 2 yards or less, 38% for Miami in both of those games. So they had a pretty good success on the ground of stopping them. The problem is 42% against Florida and 46% against Notre Dame did go for over 4 yards a pop. So, you know, you got to keep them bottled up and they're going to keep pushing. Yep. They are going to keep pushing and try and break through. I mean, they ran it 37 times against Notre Dame and 45 times against Florida. But when we talk about some of the skill personnel here, as you mentioned, man, the guy to know about is number 10, Malachi Toney, the slot guy. That's going to be one of the toughest ones to stop, right? 22 receptions on the season, 268 yards and a touchdown. All three of their starting receivers, Michael, they got sure hands, right?
Yeah.
Toney, 81.5% complete or reception percentage, no drops. CJ Daniels, 81.8% reception percentage, one drop. Keelan Marion, 73.3%, one drop. So they're going to catch the ball. But Toney is the one. He has been consistently good. He's almost like the Jeremy Bernard of Alabama. Like, he's just consistently putting up yards. Now, he only had 40 versus Florida. They didn't throw the ball well in that game, but he's been, other than that, over 50, I think, in every single game they've had so far this season. CJ Daniels, he had 46 versus Notre Dame, but only 16 yards against Florida. A lot of his, he's got 191 on the season. 129 of that came against South Florida and Bethune-Cookman. So again, I think it's the one guy you really got to focus on. Keelan Marion, also here, he had one catch on two targets for 8 yards against Florida, three catches on four targets for 29 yards against Notre Dame. So it really seems like the Malachi Toney is the guy. And I think the matchup of the game that you're probably going to see, being he's the slot, is going to be Edwin Joseph matching up on Malachi Toney. That's going to be kind of the one that you're going to have that's going to maybe even determine this game, right? Edwin Joseph against Alabama allowed one reception on four targets for 8 yards and 5 yak yards. Against UVA, not quite as good. He allowed three catches on five targets for 13 yards and 22 yak yards. So he's been pretty solid in coverage. I will give him that. Yeah. You know, he's a really good man coverage guy. I mean, that's what he was recruited for. So I think you need to see what you can do there as far as him being able to lock him up. Now, from a running back perspective, Mark Fletcher Jr. is their lead guy. 66 attempts, 388 yards, 5.88 yards per attempt, and 5 touchdowns. Shamar Brown, he's kind of a thick back. Like, he's kind of a bigger guy. He's a powerful runner. Reminds me a lot of the number three from Virginia, unfortunately. But 49 attempts, 206 yards, 4.2 yards per attempt, and 4 touchdowns there. And then when you talk about this offensive line, they are 52nd in pass block efficiency. They've allowed 3 sacks on Beck, only 17 pressures on the entire season. Remember, Florida State had 19 on Alabama. They've only given up 17 all season on Carson Beck. They're averaging 4.75 yards per carry as a team, which is 52nd in the country. They're big, man. They're big, they're strong, they're powerful. But the numbers aren't like the best in the country. This is not last year's Miami's offense. This is not the number one scoring offense in the country, right? The difference between Miami last year and this year is, like, the offense, the defense was a boat anchor, but you had a speedboat towing that boat anchor. This year, it's like the defense is very solid, and the offense is good enough to play with that good defense. Like, if they had last year's defense, man, they might be like 1-3 or 2-2 right now. But that defense has been the real big difference. So give me some final thoughts on this offense, then we'll switch over to defense.
Just looking at the running backs, obviously this offensive line is a really good offensive line. It's Mario Cristobal's specialty. He's been recruiting, they've been developing, you know, these guys for a long time. Obviously Mark Fletcher Jr. has been there last 3 years. He's had over 500 yards, I think, both season, I believe, there as well. And then Shamar Brown comes from North Dakota State University. had 1,100 yards last season. He's a runner. He's a tough runner. He's a guy that you can't, you know, I saw some of these kind of tackles against Virginia where you just kind of throw your arm around and just hope they fall down. You're not going to be able to do that. You're going to lose that arm, basically, if you try to do that with Jamar Brown.
Yeah.
So, these are not guys to just mess around with. They're going to run. They're going to run hard. They're going to try to run over. You've got to wrap up. You've got to hit them head on. That same energy and determination that we saw against Alabama, where we were just like headhunters without getting a targeting call, we've got to bring that back to this game. You've got to hit them and hit them early.
Yeah, and I think Brown was actually – he was their leading receiver against Florida, so he can do some work out of the backfield too there. But let's flip over to the defense, Michael. But before we do that, let me bring you a quick word from today's sponsor, and that is Alumni Hall. Look, if you guys are going to be in Tallahassee for this game, get you some new gear, get you some game day supplies, whatever you need, they got you covered. It's a convenient location on the way to Doak, 1415 Timber Lane Road in Tallahassee, or you can shop online at alumnihall.com. You can shop online and pick up in store for a nice, easy process there. Make sure you tell them we sent you and save 10% with code SPEAR. Friday night when I get into Tallahassee, Michael, that's the first place I'm going. I got to go get some stuff for game day. You guys know I'm always going to hit up Alumni Hall. So make sure you check them out and save 10% with code SPEAR. You can use that code online or in store. So you just tell them at the register, code SPEAR, and they'll get you hooked up. So we appreciate you guys supporting those that support us, and we appreciate Alumni Hall for sponsoring this episode. Michael, let's talk about some defense here, right? This is the thing that I think people are kind of worried about. Like, I know people are worried about our defense, but I don't think their offense is great, right? I don't think it's better than Virginia's. The defense is one that I'm a little bit worried about in some areas from a matchup standpoint. So they got some dudes up front. There's no other way around it. Like Amezador and Bain on the edges, they're NFL guys. They both have 19 pressures and a pair of sacks on the season. They have speed on the perimeter. I think perimeter blocking will be a big part of this game, what you can do, because, you know, it's not like some of the other teams. Like, Miami's got the speed that Florida State has. And so if you get the ball in space, they can run you down. And so you have to be able to hold your blocks there. This defense is – they are allowing right now 11.5 points per game, but that number is 15.5 against Power Four teams. So you got Notre Dame at 24 and Florida at 7. But again, you got to look at the offenses here, right? I mean, what they play. Now, Notre Dame's offense has come alive. They have gotten a lot better. They're actually 11th in the country right now, but Florida's is 99th. So it is bad. Like I said, 8.5 points per game against Power Four defenses. Woof, that is worse than 2024 FSU at this point. And the thing is, man, this defense held Florida. I mean, I know it's a bad offense, but they made them look awful. 141 total yards in that game, 2.7 yards per play. I don't know that I've ever seen it that low. Man, that was just really bad. Pass defense, 168 yards per game allowed. Only 61 passing yards against Florida. Probably should have at least been 161, but DJ missed at least 100 yards worth of passes. Notre Dame did put up 221, and South Florida did throw for 292 yards on them. I'm sure some of that came later in the game against the backups once it got blown out, or they were getting blown out. They're 68th in completion percentage allowed at 61.6%. But here's something, you know, when we were talking in the pre-show, Michael, we were talking about how can you hang with that defensive line for four quarters, right?
Right.
You know, I got to looking, man. Something that's interesting is I don't know how much depth they have on that defensive line. They have amazing starters. I'll give them that. But the starting four defensive line have played over 120 snaps. No other defensive lineman has played over 70 so far this season. Bain and Mezador played literally every single snap against Florida. Every snap. Wow. So they didn't even take a snap off. Now, Florida's offense stinks, so they only ran 52 snaps. But if Florida State gets up to, you know, 70-plus snaps, how much gas do those guys have in the tank? Yeah, so that's something that I wonder, too, because we haven't really seen their backups play a whole lot. Yeah, but I definitely think the trenches is what you're the most worried about in this game, and our offensive line being able to hold up against that defensive line for four quarters. But, man, when we were talking about that, it was kind of interesting to see that they get a bulk of the snaps. And I think even on the interior, only two other guys played in that game. Right. So they don't rotate a ton. So, man, if you know how Gus Malzahn's offense is, they try and just wear you down. So in that fourth quarter, and if you're not subbing and Florida State runs 70-plus plays, I kind of wonder how much gas they're going to have in the tank at the end of this game.
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, I mean, The thing is that, first of all, to acknowledge this is a really good defensive front. Like, you have to acknowledge that right up front. I mean, you know, Reuben Bain Jr. or Hurricane, whatever they call him.
I keep him on the field the whole time too.
Exactly. He's the number one defensive player rated in college football, according to PFF. 129 snaps, has a 93.8% rating. Like, I mean, he's one of the best pass rushers there is in the game right now in college football. So you already know that he is a weapon. And then you got the other guy, what was his name again?
Mezidor.
Yeah, who's just as good as well. I mean, right now, I just saw a stat the other day that he has a 29.4% pass rush win rate. With his 5 pressures, 1 sack, 6-year senior, right? I mean, 29.4% pass rush win rate, meaning almost 30% of the time he's getting to the quarterback. He's touching, he's there in the quarterback's face like that. So this defensive line is really incredible. But you bring up a really fascinating point. If they're playing 90% of the snaps, let's just go with that. Let's just be generous. I mean, they played 100% of the snaps in the Florida game. They're playing 90% of the snaps. The way Gus Malzahn likes to run and the up tempo overtime, and they're not subbing, man. Oh, I mean, remember Gus's number one thing is to try to wear down that defensive front so that then they're again, we use the term about Miami's offensive line. Well, Gus wants to lean on you as well. He wants those offensive linemen to get on you so that now they're, instead of just getting 2 or 3 yards a carry, you're getting 4 or 5. You're averaging 4 or 5 yards a carry because you're tired, because you've just been pass rushing and running up, and they're just running past you. So I think that's going to be an important key there for Florida State's offense, is making sure they're leaning on this offensive line. But then how do they make it so that Tommy can stay upright, right?
Yeah.
Do they move the pocket around? Are they running a lot of misdirection towards that? You know, I imagine that they're going to try to chip a lot of those two defensive players there. They're going to run tight ends at them. They're going to run running backs at them to try to make sure that they get at least 2 people on those guys. I'd be surprised if you see more than, I'd say, 10 to 15% of the play calls where they're not doubled at some point, or they're not at least chipped at some point. So I know, I would imagine that's going to be a focal point for Gus and Herb Hand to try to figure that out to protect, one, create holes for the run game, but also protect Tommy.
Yeah, and I just looked at the Notre Dame game. They played 48 of 60 snaps. So they get the majority of snaps in those games. But again, you haven't had a team go over 60 snaps yet. So again, that's, man, right. if you can get to the middle 70s, I think, you know, I mean, look at the way Notre Dame came back in the second half. Was that just the defense was maybe getting a little bit tired? But then when we continue down and talk about personnel, you got linebackers Wesley Bissainthe and Muhammad Toure, I guess that's how you say that. I would say their linebacker core has been good, maybe not great. I know Bissainthe had like a 40-something PFF grade against Florida. I'm not, you know, PFF grades aren't the gospel around here. But,
right.
I mean, you know, I think this is probably the least special group that they have. But it's not bad. It's not a bad group at all. When you look at the secondary, you know, hey, man, all they do is recruit and develop down there in Miami. I mean, go and get their whole secondary out of the portal. and so Xavier Lucas, their cornerback, he is allowing an 83.3% reception percentage so far. OJ Frederick is their best, probably right now their best corner, 42.9% reception percentage allowed. Ethan Connors, who's their third most used corner, has allowed 100% reception rate so far. Their safeties, Scott is allowing 60%, and Poyser is 60% as well. So, you know, I can't say it's been a lockdown secondary. Right. So far, but I mean, it's a good group, right? They went and got a lot of talented pieces out of the portal. When you talk about the rush defense, Michael, this is where I start to get a little bit worried, being that it's a Gus Malzahn run heavy offense. So right now they are only giving up 3 yards per carry against those power 4 defenses. They have not allowed 100 yards rushing in any of their games so far this season, and only 2 rushing touchdowns on the season. Now, technically, Florida did have 101 yards, but Lagway got sacked 5 times.
Right,
so sack adjusted, it was 101. But from a net standpoint, they have not given up 100 yards on the ground this season. And, you know, Florida State's offense is predicated on running for over 200. So this is going to be your biggest challenge. I mean, if you can bust that number, you're doing pretty good. I will also say this. They have faced 0 rushing offenses ranked in the top 50. And yeah, right now, Florida State's is number two. So again, this is going to be a tough challenge for them. Again, I know you racked up almost 400 on Kent State. I don't even really want to hear about that because it's Kent State. But you did run for over 200 against Alabama and Virginia. So I think you're going to give them some fits here in the run game. But man, this is a really good run defense. So this might determine the winner of the game if you can run on that defense or not. Now, they have 4-6 turnovers, 3 interceptions, 3 fumbles. And, you know, here's the thing when we talk about Tommy in the pass game and keeping him upright. I mean, first off, I think he's going to need his legs in this game because you're going to have, like you said, you're going to have to move the pocket to get away from these guys. But they only have 6 sacks against power forward teams, and 5 of those was on Lagway. And again, we know that's a terrible offense, and he may have even been hurt in that game. Right. So they only sacked Notre Dame 1 time. And they really haven't, to not bore you with the numbers, but what I did is I went back and looked comparative to what other teams did against those teams. They really haven't created a significant amount more pressures versus other teams than other teams did against Florida and Notre Dame. So on paper, they're a great defensive line. I get that. But some of the production in the run standpoint, they look elite. But some of the pressure numbers have just been okay. You know, they've been pretty good. Now, when you talk about third down defense, they're top 10 there. They're only allowing 24% conversions. Red zone defense, they're giving up 7 scores on 9 trips, 5 touchdowns, 2 field goals there. Explosive plays allowed, only 11 on the season, 8 through the pass, 3 through the run. And now, let me throw you one more defensive stat, and I'll wrap up my defensive thoughts here, Michael. You know what really absolutely killed us against Virginia was missed tackles. We had 15 missed tackles against Virginia. Miami had 13 missed tackles against Florida. So, hey, I'm just saying, for every kind of little bit of ugly we have, man, when you look at what Florida State did against Virginia, the way you beat yourself, it was almost like Miami kind of had the same game against Florida. That offense was just so putrid, you were still able to win the game.
Right.
And so they're not scot-free of mistakes either. So I'm just kind of painting a picture here of like, that defensive line is really good, that offensive line is really good, but, you know, games are won and lost in the trenches, which is what makes you nervous in this game. But I do think outside of that, man, I think Florida State matches up pretty well against this team because I think there's a lot of good, but not maybe a ton of special, just that would you would expect to wipe you off the field, right, in any way, shape, or form. So the trenches is what I'm worried about. But everything else, man, we'll see.
Yeah, I think what Virginia did, for me at least, is that, you know, I went into that game thinking that Florida State had, based on what I saw against Alabama, because that's the game that really counts, man, Florida State controlled their running game. Now, you could say, well, you know, Ryan Grubb went away from some of his tendencies. He tried to throw more, all of that stuff. No, I think Alabama tried to run the ball. They just could not. They didn't find success. Florida State was very aggressive. They were hard-hitting. They played their gaps really well. The safeties came up when they were supposed to. All those things are so true. I think Virginia, in some ways, like went in a reverse sense of that. We were slow to trigger on gaps. We got manhandled up front sometimes against what was basically a second string offensive line. So you worry about Florida State's defense against Miami's offensive line to be able to show up there. But then you also worry about Florida State's offensive line against that defense, where you saw Virginia get some pressure on Tommy in ways that you shouldn't have. I mean, we talked about the pre-show, that last play of the game in overtime and double overtime. I mean, they only rushed 4, and yet immediately he barely had the ball in his hand. He had pressure in his face. So you have to wonder, like, where's the psyche of this offensive line? I think, again, if Gus Malzahn can get this into a high play, Florida State ran 83 offensive snaps against Virginia. If you're making that defensive line of Miami play 83 snaps, or let's say they play 75 to 80% of those snaps, right? You're looking somewhere between 60 and 70 snaps in that game. If you can get them that high, you can wear them down. You can run on them. But I think what's going to be a key to this game, one of the big keys, my big key to this game, is the trenches on both sides of the ball. Can we slow the run down defensively? And can we get pressure on Beck defensively? Well, that falls to the trenches, Jesse.
Yeah, that's the part that worries me, because I think almost every Florida State fan goes into this game and thinks, Well, which is the real Florida State? The one right. I saw hold Alabama to 3 yards a carry, or the one that gave up over 200 on the ground right. to Virginia? And so right. I do think Florida State's been a much better team at home. And I'm really hoping in that Virginia game, a lot of it had to do with first one on the road on short week and things like that. You know, I understand all that. And I think you make a great point. Like, I think, you know, Gus Malzahn talks a lot about this offense where he doesn't care about time of possession. He cares about snaps.
Right.
And so I think you should use tempo in this game. I think you should try and push north of 75 to close to 80 snaps in this game because, you know, we talked about it. They've only scored 13 and 14 points in the first half against both of the good, the power four teams that they played. And so I think if you can, you know, like a boxing match, like we always talk about with Alabama, if you can get the game to the fourth quarter and you've worn that defense down a little bit and you're within one score, I think you obviously have a chance in this game. So I think that's a big part of it, is run that snap count up, wear that defense down, and just do as whatever you got to do. I don't care if it's trick plays or whatever it is, to be in this game in the fourth quarter, because that's what Gus Malzahn wants. He wants to wear you down, and then you're tired in the fourth quarter and they're not. So that's going to be the one to watch. But again, Michael, like you said, man, the thing that makes me nervous is the battle in the trenches, because if Virginia's yep. offensive line did to you what they did with down their center, this Miami offensive line is night and day better than that Virginia that's offensive right. line. Now, that's I right. do think Virginia's offense as a whole is a little bit better. I think Chandler Morris is a better quarterback than Carson Beck in that system. And with what he, when you look at the complete package of what he does with his legs and everything, I think he's just as good. So the game's going to be won or lost in the trenches. But, man, let's talk about some final thoughts, keys, and score prediction, and then we'll wrap this thing up. So, you know, we just talked about a lot of our kind of final thoughts where this game is won in the trenches, and that's maybe the biggest concern. I do think you're going to find some opportunities. Now Miami does have a little bit of length at defensive back. But I think both their corners are 6'2". So, you know, Deuce is going to have to work for them jump balls. I think you're going to need someone else to step up in this game. You're going to need Squirrel White to step up in this game. You're going to need a third receiver or a tight end. You're going to need Randy Pittman to come up big in this game, because they're going to start keying on Deuce. Someone's going to figure it out eventually. I don't know how no one has done that yet. But man, I think you're going to have, Tommy even said it, right? I think this game is going to come down to who can make the plays at the skill positions. And, you know, hopefully that's something that Florida State can do. But, you know, man, let me save this up maybe a little bit I'll go ahead and say it now for some final thoughts before we get into keys. I understand there's trepidation coming into this game because of what happened in Charlottesville. I get that. This team was so much better at home than they were on the road. So that's what we're wondering. Which team are we going to get? I do think this team is going to respond. I know we talked about it before the show. Hey, maybe we don't need a loss to make us play hard.
Right, right.
But look at what it did to Alabama. Like, Alabama is a different animal since you lost to them. Now, does Florida State have it in them to respond in that type of manner? We're going to find out on Saturday, because this game's going to go a long way in telling you which was the real Florida State. But, man, I do think they're going to respond. I do think they know they played like absolute crap, and they can't afford to do that in this one. I do think they're going to play with – there was not a lot of energy in that game. They looked kind of flat. This is a rivalry game at home in front of your home crowd, man. I think they're going to come out juiced. I think they're going to play hard. I think they're going to play much better than they did last week in Charlottesville. So, man – It's just kind of where when you match up, can you stop what Miami does on offense, because it just beat you at Virginia, and can you stay in this game and wear that defensive line out, because that's what I worry about. So those are really the big things I'm watching, man. So give me some final thoughts, then we'll do some quick keys and a score prediction.
Yeah, listen, I think, again, I'm going back to what I just said, like the massive key to this game is, how does your offensive line play against their defensive line? How does your defensive line play against their offensive line? Can you slow the run? Can you run the ball with consistency, with passion, with force? I mean, can you push back that defensive line? Can you cause them to question what they're seeing? Like, you know, Gus is going to, I imagine he's going to throw a lot. He's going to try to make them, in the same way what he said against Alabama, that he's going to make them not trust what they're seeing, right?
Make their keys lie to them.
Yeah, make their keys lie to them. Can you do the same thing against Miami? Because Miami is the kind of defense that just fires off. Like, they just fire off. And so can you make their keys lie to them? They see one thing, but then they go after that, and it's something completely different. Can you do that? And then on the defensive side, you know, can you get to Carson? Can you get him off his lunch? You just said this, man. That guy dealing with pressure is not the same guy who's not with over. And a lot of quarterbacks are in the same way, but like for him specifically, those stats, man, that we should do all we can to make his day just a nightmare, a living nightmare, right? Pressuring the wide receivers, you know, sending five, six at times, confusing, you know, showing one thing at the pre-snap, and then at the snap, you see a completely different look. Like we should just do all of that to try to get him to again, tell his keys to lie to him, like we did with Alabama and Ty Simpson. Yeah. I think if you can do that with the trenches, I think that'll give you the best chance to walk out of Doak Campbell Stadium with a win.
Yeah, I think you need to have a smart game plan. Like, don't try and drop back pass. Don't try and do that. You know they're coming, so you got to get it away from there. But I got four quick keys for you here. First off, key number one is finish plays, man. And by that, that's what Tony White talked about. Tackle somebody. Wrap up and tackle somebody. You cannot have 15 missed tackles in this game and expect to win. That's a simple key. Tackle somebody and actually finish the job. Number two, find a way to pressure Carson Beck. We just talked about it, man. His pressure numbers are night and day different. To me, I would rather, like we talked about, man, I would rather you play an aggressive style defense where you're bringing six, maybe even more than that, and you're manning up on the outside. And if you give up, if you get popped over the top, they haven't shown the ability to stretch the field yet. It is what it is, man. I'd rather live with that than watch what we watched against Virginia. Yep. 75% completion percentage, like 6 yards per attempt. They're just dinking, dunking you all the way down the field, man. Come after him, set the tone on pressure and Beck. Key number three, establish the run. They have not given up 100 yards on the ground yet. You know, for Florida State to win, you probably are going to need to hit close to 200. I don't want to see Tommy have to throw the ball 35 times in this game because they got a pretty good secondary, right? So I think you have to be able to find a way to run the ball. And then the last one, Michael, this is simple. This is nothing X's and O's. Bring the freaking juice, man. This is Florida State, Miami. You're at home at night in Doak Campbell Stadium. It's going to be a crazy atmosphere. They did not look ready for a fight in Virginia. In
Alabama, didn't look juicy.
No, that was a desert up there, a desert of emotion. Against Alabama, they looked like they were ready for the challenge. Yeah. They looked like we knew we were going to come into this game and beat them. I need to see that killer instinct in this game. This is Florida State, Miami. Right. If you can't get up for this, you ain't getting up at all, man. So that's my four. The last one is, man, just bring the freaking juice. Punch them in the mouth first. Don't be scared or timid. Go play your freaking butt off in front of your home crowd.
Yeah, I love those keys. Listen, I think, again, you know, I have three, and they really, the two center in the trenches. Number one, you got to disrupt Beck. You may not always get to him, but you've got to disrupt him. You've got to make him get off his launch pad. You got to make his keys lie to him. Number two, you've got to slow down the run. You've got to slow down the run, right? Because they're going to try to run the ball at you. So force Beck to try to win the game with his arms, you know, get up into those wide receivers, but you've got to disrupt Beck. You've got to slow the run down, and you've got to punch first. And you've got to punch last. You hear what I'm saying? This ain't like a punch first and then wilt away. No, you've got to punch first and you've got to punch last. And that's metaphorically. Let's not punch for reals, okay? But you've got to punch first.
Earl Little,
first.
Pay attention to that.
Yeah, Earl Little. Come on now. Like, you've got to punch first and you've got to punch last. Meaning, you should be punching the whole game. I mean, over and over again, not just jabs. If you got a chance for a haymaker and the play's right there, Tommy, make it, right? Don't try to be a superhero. Make the play in front of you. Those are jabs. And when that haymaker comes, you take your shot, whatever that is, whether that's a run, that's a throw. If the defense, if you got a chance to pick a ball off, go for it. Pick that ball, secure it, catch it in your arms like this, right?
Okay. Yeah.
I know that's hard, but we can do that. We've dropped so many interceptions already this season, right? I mean, we had almost one against Virginia. That could have been a game changer, right? So, like, let's do those things, okay? Punch first, punch last. Disrupt Beck, slow the run. You give yourself a chance to win.
For sure, man. Before we do our score prediction, guys, if you're enjoying this, go ahead and like and subscribe to stay connected to your source for fan-driven FSU content. Hit the notification bell So you don't ever miss an episode. We're racking you guys up. I'm recording with a Miami podcaster tomorrow. We're going to have an inside look at the Hurricanes. Of course, you know, we're going to have a post-game show. I mean, we're trying our best to crank out some content for you guys as much as we can. So all you got to do is give us a like and subscribe in return. We would love that. It's free. It doesn't cost you anything. And you're not signing up for anything or anything like that. So just hit that subscribe button. It really helps the channel out. It helps us be able to do things like have the tailgates, which I'm going to talk about after this. So if you're going to be at the Miami game, stay present for after the score prediction. I'm going to give you the details on that. Also, if you would like to join the channel as a member, and shout out to our newest member, Melanie, who I met at the Virginia tailgate. She became a member right there on the spot. That's how we're able to do a lot of these things. That's right. How we're able to throw tailgates. We don't charge for our tailgates, and we have all kinds of fun at it. We had a great time at Virginia. So if you'd like to do that, hit the join button, and it's like $5 a month, man. Everything goes back into the show and everything we do here. So I appreciate you guys supporting us here at Plant the Spirit. Michael, it's time. It is time for the score predictions. Now, I don't know where we're going to end up on this, but I always go first. I'm going to let you go first on this one. So go ahead and give me your score prediction.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, DX probably brings to you. No, I'm just kidding. Listen, this game means so much to the state of Florida. You know, every year we come this game, and it's bragging rights that's on the line. You know, obviously for Florida State, it's the state championship. I guess if Miami wins, it'll be the state champion. Yep. They'll get it again this year if they win. You know, right? Like, we take those things seriously. It's recruiting rights, but this also has ACC implications. This also has playoff implications. You lose this game, you end up, you're 0-2 now on the season. You're really playing from significantly behind. You're going to need help to get to the ACC championship game if you lose this game. So there's so many implications to this game. Your credibility, your like the recruiting, the passion and the juice you got from beating Alabama. If you lose this game, all of that is gone. It's gone. You lost to Virginia. Now you lose to Miami. It's all gone. And you're back to where you started at the beginning of the season, right? So this game matters. It's super important. I think Florida State has a great chance to come into this game. It's sold out. Doak Campbell, 7:30. You know it's going to be wild. You know people are going to be saying some of the craziest things you've ever heard for this game, right? It's going to be an electric atmosphere. Even though they lost, I think it's still going to be an electric atmosphere. The thing I come back to is that the trenches matter so much. The trenches matter so much. And had this game been the week four game against instead of Virginia, if this was Miami, I would be super confident in saying that I think Florida State has the better of the trenches, both defensively and offensively, and they were going to win this game. After what I saw against Virginia, I am back to square one. I don't know what to believe about this team. Is what we saw with Bama real, or is it what we saw with Virginia real? And I think we're probably somewhere in the middle. And I just think, Jesse, somewhere in the middle is not going to be good enough to beat Miami. So I hate to say this. And let me just say, I hope I'm wrong. Like, I pray that I'm wrong. Okay. But I have Miami winning this game 28-24.
Boo. I'm just kidding.
I know.
All right, so here we go, Michael. You know we got bit in our first road trip last week, right? Mm-hmm. This is Miami's first time away from home, and they're not going – no offense to those guys up there in Charlottesville. They got the win. They're not going to Scott Stadium. Mm-hmm. They're going to a sold-out 70,000 Doak Campbell Stadium that was rocking against Alabama, and this is going to be 10 times worse. The fans are going to be full-throated in this one, so it is going to be a crazy environment. Which I think is going to be a big factor in that. I think the fans are going to be a big factor. I think their first game on the road is going to be a big factor in a tough environment. I do think this team is going to bounce back. I think they know what is at stake. Because you're right, man. If you win this game, let's be honest, that Virginia loss doesn't really matter. Mm-mm. If you lose this game, you're in trouble because you mm-hmm. probably don't have another ranked team on the schedule for your at-large bid. And you're going to need some help in ACC play to make it to Charlotte. So I think they know what's at stake here. I think you make a great point. Who is the real Florida State? But I think the one we saw was at home, and I think they play better at home. They've looked better at home. I think they are going to bounce back. I think this, you know, if you had to take a gut punch to get you focused, and Lord knows maybe we can do that without losing sometime or another.
Mom.
But I would have rather it come against Virginia than Miami because I would always choose to beat Miami first. So I do think Florida State's going to respond in this game, and I think Doak is going to be the difference. I think Florida State's got a thing coming for Miami. I've watched that team a little bit. I will fully give them credit. They're a good team. That's why they're number three in the country. I think Florida State's going to have some things ready. I think maybe they were even not smart and saved some things for Miami that they should have done in Virginia to win the game.
Yeah.
If they play with the same game plan they did in Charlottesville, they're going to lose this game. I can guarantee you that. But I think it was a learning experience. And dadgummit, Michael, I ain't never picking Miami in any game. Give me the spear. We're Florida freaking State. We're in Doak Campbell Stadium, and we're not losing. Give me the Noles, 31-27, to down the U at home. We're coming back on them. I'm telling you, I got this feeling. Florida State's going to be rocking. Tommy said he's ready to be part of two field stormings. Guys, I don't think we need to storm the field against this one again.
No, we don't.
But, man, it's going to be a great night in Tallahassee. I think Doak is the difference. So I got the Noles taking this one and upsetting number three Miami. Let's go. I wouldn't pick Miami anyway. I didn't care. I think you told me I picked this last year anyway. So that's going to be it for this episode, guys. Again, if you're going to be in Tallahassee, we are going to have a tailgate, Lot 7. It is right across the way from Dickhauser Stadium. It is right on the far side of the circus tents. It is a like first come, first serve lot, so I can't guarantee you where we're going to be in that lot, but you will see a garnet tent with a flag above it that says Seminoles on it. Look for that. I also have some Plant the Spear stuff up. You guys are more than welcome to come out. We would love to meet with all the listeners. We're going to have a TV there. We'll have games on all day. We're going to have a good time, man. I'm going to go ahead and tell you now, I was on duty for Virginia. Michael, my alter ego comes out for the Miami game. So I will say right now, I cannot be held responsible for who I turn into at this Miami game because I hate this team with a passion. So you never know. But please come out to the tailgate. I would love to see you guys. Like and subscribe on the channel. Rate and review on the podcast. Helps us reach other Noles fans. Guys, this is the big one. This is the one we've been waiting for. And that's going to be it. We will see you on the other side. With that being said, Michael, I'm going to say go Noles.
Go Noles.
And FM. See you guys on the other side.